Hello and welcome to the Compliance Week podcast. I'm Joe Mont, staff writer for Compliance Week, and in this edition we discuss regulatory and compliance issues that are facing the financial services world with Todd Sipperman. He's the founding principal of Sipperman Compliance Services, a consulting firm that provides outsourced compliance services for advisors, broker-dealers, and funds. Among the topics we discuss are individual liability, third-party compliance reviews, and the continuing buzz around culture. We asked Sipperman what he sees as the top issues in financial services compliance. In particular, we've seen the naming of individuals in some enforcement actions by the SEC and throughout the asset management industry.
Clearly, there's sort of two pieces of it. There's sort of the compliance side, and then there's sort of naming individuals on the senior executive side. Certainly, it appears that the SEC is very focused on naming an individual every time they bring an enforcement case. If you look at the enforcement cases over the last, 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, you see almost always there's a name attached to it, an individual. And the SEC has been pretty clear, both in field of enforcement as well as Mary Jo White, that holding individuals accountable is a big part of their enforcement agenda. And they view that as having a deterrent effect on other wrongdoers. So I think that executives need to understand that that's the environment they live in, and that they have to really take ownership of the compliance function, because they will be held accountable if things go wrong. Having said that, I think the compliance function itself has its own issues. What are the issues? One is compliance culture, and that's a big thing that the regulators are looking for. FINRA is doing a compliance culture sweep, as you may have heard, and the SEC has talked about the tone at the top and compliance culture and what that means for firms. And then the question goes, how do you sort of prove compliance culture? And I think the other thing is CCOs, when you put the two together, compliance culture, naming individuals, they're also very concerned with getting named individually. And that's also a big concern going into this year.
There was a lot of discussion from the SEC, FINRA, and others about maintaining a culture of compliance. What are some takeaways?
I get asked all the time, so how do I prove that there's a good compliance culture with objective things? Well, one of those ways to prove that you're at least committed to culture is sort of what I call walking the compliance walk and not just talking the talk. And what that means is spending enough on compliance. Spending shows in a business that shows how you're committed. And we have recommended the firms spend no less than 5% of their revenues on compliance as sort of a benchmark. You may need to spend more, maybe slightly less, but if you're not spending about 5% of your revenues, you really need to ask yourself, are you committed to a good compliance culture? And that number, comes from, everything from our empirical work and anecdotally. There's a KPMG study of hedge funds that goes back a couple years, which said that firms spend on average about 7% of operating costs on compliance. We've sort of converted that to a revenue figure. But so spending on compliance is a big one. I think that's one. I think two, what happens to senior executives who sort of keep running afoul of the rules? And are they continually promoted? Are they ignored? Or are they disciplined? So do you have a history of disciplining those who engage in regulatory issues, small and large? So I think that's one. And three, the other thing that FINRA wanted to see is what kind of opportunity is there out there for internal compliance and risk management people? Do they have the opportunity to apply, and are they being selected for senior management roles, or is it sort of compliance sort of its own dead-end job? So those are a couple of the areas that you can, as the firm can demonstrate objectively that they have a good firm compliance culture.
Sipperman recently wrote on his firm's blog that, quote, failure to focus on compliance infrastructure can have the same negative consequences for senior executives as product failures, revenue shortfalls, or stock price declines. We asked him to elaborate.
What have we learned? I think a better question is, what has the industry learned? I wrote that in connection with the Zenefits case, which is a case outside the classic investment management industry. And I think the lesson there, that was a real growth company that was moving very fast and making a lot of money. But was in a highly regulated industry and by their own admission, did not spend enough time focusing on what were considered not as significant regulatory issues. Well, it ultimately cost the founder and CEO his job. That was not a regulatory action. I mean, there were some regulatory actions, but they weren't against him. But ultimately, the company decided, the board decided that because of his failures to ensure a good compliance culture and regulatory infrastructure, that they needed a new direction. It cost him his job and his company, which is really it's unfortunate. The question is: Are firms in these regulated industries are they getting it? Do they understand that compliance is more than, you know, hiring a person, throwing him or her in a corner and saying, hey, we got a compliance function because that person's sitting over there, that in fact it's really part of the business now. It's part of your infrastructure. Have companies learned that? Some have. I think many have not. I think people sort of confuse timing. I hear a lot, well, if there's a new president, if there's a more business-friendly administration, this is all going to change. I got to tell you, I don't think so. And the reason I say that is I have seen this sort of change in the regulatory environment. I sort of date it back to about 2003. I put the seminal event as the market timing cases, and Elliot Spitzer starting to enforce these laws that had not been enforced in the past. And I have seen a general regulatory uptick right through the Bush administration, through the Obama administration. I don't see this as changing. And, in fact, it's a global trend. If you look at what's going on in Europe, this idea of prudential regulation of asset managers, I think this is just the evolution and not just an administration policy issue.
Zenefits, the company mentioned by Siberman, is a human resources software company that's come under the scrutiny of state regulators as they look into whether the firm's employees were properly licensed and trained to sell health insurance. Is this a cautionary tale for startups and growing firms and disruptive ideas that may not fully appreciate the need to focus on compliance?
I'm going to be a little more forgiving. I'm a compliance guy, but I also run a small business. I think part of the issue is it's one of focus and survival, particularly startups or emerging companies. You know, they're just focused on making it through the day. You know, and they're focusing their resources on what they think is critical, which is, bringing in new business and growing. The problem is, I think you got to look at compliance as just part of your operational infrastructure that you can't ignore, or you're going to run into real problems. Just like you need to pay rent, you know, no matter what you do, you're going to need to have a bookkeeper no matter what you do. You're going to need to keep financials no matter how big you are. You need a decent compliance function. That has not been the case. Look, up until, you know, maybe 10 years ago, you know, two guys in a Bloomberg terminal could operate an investment management firm. Well, I think those days are long over. You know, now there's a base level of infrastructure and a cost of doing business that you just got to understand as part of the world, or don't even try. So I think the world has changed, and I think that's what's changed. It's a cost of doing business. You can't compete unless you have good infrastructure.
There was a push afoot for mandatory third-party compliance reviews for investment advisors. We asked Siberman to share his thoughts on this.
Yeah, we think it's a pretty elegant solution, actually. I mean, so some of the solutions, well, let's start with the problem. The problem that is identified is that the SEC only visits around 10% of investment advisors per year. And there's been a lot of talk whether those statistics are relevant, you know, what percentage of assets do they visit. Well, let's put that aside. Let's assume that we all agree that there should be more reviews of investment advisors. So some of the ideas that have come out, obviously, the SEC would like more money to hire more examiners. It's very tough in this political environment to get higher budgets, although they have gotten some. The idea of a self-regulatory organization, even FINRA taking it over, has come up. And the problem with that is there's a lot of the IA community, you know, has a lot of skepticism toward FINRA. And, you know, FINRA has been criticized in other contexts for their way of regulating. And I just think the IA community really is not keen on that idea. And then this idea of third-party reviews came up. I think that the biggest proponent was Commissioner Gallagher, former Commissioner Gallagher, was sort of trumpeting this idea. Now, it's a bit of an elegant idea in the sense that, we already have a system in place for third-party review to make sure people are doing the right thing, and they're called financial statement audits. There's a whole system out there where third-party auditors review people's financial statements and certify them and give the public comfort that they're doing the right thing. So the idea of doing a compliance review akin, analogous, not the same thing, to a financial statement audit is not that radical of an idea. It's certainly a very doable thing. It becomes, it's not government funded, so you don't have to worry about the congressional issues, and it's self-funded by the industry, so it borrows a piece of the sort of the SRO idea. It's certainly a very elegant idea. We think it's very workable, and I think it's a viable political solution. So there's lots of questions about it. I do think the SEC is going to have to, put out specific standards, almost like they did with like a PCAOB kind of thing, where there's standards around and who can do it and independence rules and all the rest of it. But I think they can borrow a lot of that from the financial statement auditing world. I don't think it's going to be that huge a leap.
Speaking of the SEC, it recently fined and censured an investment advisor for using third-party performance data without verifying its accuracy. Are there lessons to be learned?
The answer is yes. There's lots of questions. I got to tell you, that case is a very troubling precedent for advisors, many of whom use third-party products all day long. I mean, that's sort of their sales point. Look, we're independent. We're using third-party products. At the end of the day, customers should feel comfort in that. And the other part of it is to do due diligence on underlying performance of all the products that you may use is really difficult and potentially really time-consuming. And then the question, because that was sort of the F-squared case, is it any performance? What about registered funds? Is there enough that you can rely on there? What about private funds? There's just no way that the staff of a sort of a medium-sized wealth manager, let's say $500 million to $2 billion or under $2 billion, has the kind of staff to do due diligence and verify underlying performance data. I think unfortunately that case was sort of a bad facts make bad law. I think there was some implication by the SEC, although not stated directly, that that respondent had some knowledge that data may not have been accurate or verified, and because they had that red flag, they should have pursued it further. And I sort of get that standard of care if that's where they're going, but to say they always have to verify all performance data provided by third-party products, it seems to me that's a very difficult standard to meet, assuming that the advisor has no reason not to believe the data that's provided. So I don't know what that means for the future. It's certainly if you see a potential red flag, or someone in retrospect can see a potential red flag, you better get some verified performance. But the problem is, Joe, fraud is really hard to deal with. I mean, if someone wants to lie, you can ask for verified performance, but they can lie about that too. So it's a very real fraud is hard to root out. As the Madoff case showed, and certainly that case is not that we're talking about is nothing like the Madoff situation, but someone intent on committing fraud, it's there's only so much due diligence you can do.
That's all the time we have for today. We've been discussing regulatory and compliance issues facing the financial services world with Todd Sipperman, founding principal of Sipperman Compliance Services. I'm Joe Mont, staff writer for Compliance Week. Thank you for listening.